What's up, After the Tones Drop family? Dropping in real quick with an exciting update from your favorite podcast. We're wrapping up the first season in the first week of May. I can't even believe it. It is crazy wild how fast this has gone. While we take a short month-long break to gear up for season two, we've got something special lined up for you. We're rolling out four fantastic bonus episodes featuring some of our favorite voices from our past guests. First up, we'll have Jason Warne, the mindfulness medic, who will help soothe your spirit. Then, Kenny Mitchell will take us behind the scenes with Operation Yellow Tape. William Young from Just Corrections will share his insights on the system. And Jess Flores will be gearing up to take us into the next shift with her podcast. Each of these incredible advocates brings a unique perspective to the world of first responder mental health. Stay tuned and keep those vibes positive, and let's keep learning and growing together. Thanks for being such an awesome part of this journey. We'll catch you soon with those bonus episodes. This is going to be a strange, unique episode today because I felt really compelled to be open and honest with the experiences that I've been experiencing lately that stem from grief. Basically, my backstory as to what got me in this line of work. But as the years passed, I started to see that I was really good at seeing into people's true pain and helping them come out on the other side of it. Like, there was just something about the resiliency of being in the depths myself. I think that that is what makes me so unique in what I do. I felt like there was something more for me to understand or learn about his passing. I thought I had moved through this. I thought I had processed all of this. But what I'm seeing is that it's because of you guys, because of all of you, the way that you've opened my eyes and let me see all of the reasons why he could no longer be on this earth, or so that I could be here for you.
It's the first responder. The first to get the call, the first on scene, greeted by God knows what, pushed beyond the limits that they don't even set. Then what happens? You're listening to After the Tones Drop. We're your hosts. I'm Cinnamon, a first responder trauma therapist who founded our practice after seeing the need for specialized care following a local line of duty death.
And I'm Erin. I'm a first responder integration coach.
We help first responders receive transformational training, therapy, and coaching.
Now we come to you to explore, demystify, and destigmatize mental health and wellness for first responders.
Our show brings you stories from real first responders, the tools they've learned, the changes they've made, and the lives they now get to live.
A quick heads up before we start. We want to acknowledge that some of the content we discuss on our show can be triggering for some listeners. Some of our episodes may touch upon themes like traumatic experiences, PTSD, suicide, and line of duty deaths. We understand that these topics are sensitive and might evoke difficult emotions. If you are currently struggling with your mental health or have experienced traumatic events recently, listen with caution. You may consider taking periodic breaks or skipping the episode altogether. We want to thank you for joining us today. Your dedication to serving our community is inspiring, and we're here to support you in any way that we can. Now, if you're ready to proceed, let's begin. This is going to be a strange and unique and kind of out of nowhere episode today because I felt like I needed to get on and share something with you all that has taken place and kind of unfolded. And truthfully, it is basically my backstory as to what got me in this line of work. So if you have not figured out by now, this is Erin, and I am all by myself. I felt really compelled to be open and honest with the experiences that I've been experiencing lately that stem completely from grief and from experiences that I did not know had the tremendous effect on me that they have. So
not really my normal self tonight because this is one of those impromptu situations that I've kind of created. And I think this is really where the rubber meets the road, when pure authenticity comes into play and when honesty comes into play. So I'm not sure how much any of you have picked up on my story. There's been little pieces that have trickled in and out over the past 6 months that we've been recording. If you don't know, I wanted to kind of give you a backstory so that it makes sense when I tell you the strange things that have been occurring over the past several days in my life. Back in the day, 15, 17 years ago, I've always had this thing where I have somehow inadvertently always ended up dating a man in uniform in some capacity, that it wasn't something that I was looking for. I guess it's that A-type macho personality. I don't know what it was. Most of the time, I didn't even know that they wore a uniform for a living until I got to know them a little bit more. And, you know, I'm saying it was probably like 17 years back because I really have no recollection of the exact time frame that it happened, but it was definitely my early 20s. And if you don't know, I'm in my early 40s now. So anyway, I have dated all different types of men in uniform, starting really in my early 20s with a man who was military police, who was deployed, which created a massive ripple, an interesting impact in my life. From him to a firefighter, from him to a cop. And then later down the line, I ended up with another firefighter. Through my time in dating these men in uniform, I had lots of interesting experiences and eye-opening experiences, things that I didn't find out until way, way, way later. A lot of the things that I didn't find out until actually working with you first responders. A lot of it was stuff that I put together after hearing your stories or really getting a good understanding of what it's like behind the scenes, behind the badge, if you will. And it's really changed my opinion on a lot of things. We're going to fast forward through the military guy and through the first firefighter and kind of go into the cop because he had some hard experiences. He's still active. Don't even think that he knows that I exist in this world. And I think if he knew that I existed and this is what I was doing nowadays, it would blow his mind. This is how life works. Life comes full circle. And sometimes we go through experiences in life and we can't really figure out why. And at the time, it feels super painful or really, really challenging. I know for me, I felt very resentful at the chain of events that took place in that relationship. Quite frankly, it was toxic. And I was toxic and he was unwell. I mean, he was rightfully so unwell, having experienced an officer-involved shooting fairly early into his career, which evolved into a lot of bashing his name and smearing his name. As many of you know, and we've talked about this on past episodes, that the last thing any officer wants to do is pull out his gun and use his gun, right? That's worst case scenario. You know, these things don't happen because people are on their best behavior. These things happen because there is a chain of events that take place that these things occur. I don't want to go into too much detail about his story because that's his story. And I do want to protect his name. But the fact is, the version of him that I ended up getting by the time I got into a relationship with him was likely not the version that he was prior. Therefore, we had a pretty unfaithful, treacherous relationship that ended up ending in a pretty ugly fashion. And part of the reason that it ended and reason that things went so sour is because, as you may know from my talking on different episodes, that I am in recovery. I am a recovering alcoholic. And by the time I got to the end of that relationship, my drinking was out of this world. It was out of control. So I was a tornado. Every freaking person that came into my life, I wrecked in some capacity. And It's part of my story. It's part of what's made me who I am today. And I can look back now and say that I don't regret any of it, for sure. It doesn't mean I'm proud of it. It just means that it's made me the strong version of who I am today. So that relationship did have to end. And I think the fortunate thing is it got so bad that I ended up getting sober shortly after that relationship ended. And fairly shortly into my recovery, I ended up meeting a man. I never intended on meeting him. And I met him in the rooms of recovery. You guys know what I'm talking about, I'm sure. And if you don't, then you're probably not an alcoholic. So that's great. Probably don't have an issue with alcohol. So that's great. But I remember making a comment when I was in a meeting one day, and the comment was, all cops and firefighters are cheaters. They can't be faithful. Of course, that is far from true, but that had been my experience. And I had just decided that I was going to lump everybody up into this one box, pile them all in there, and that was going to be facts. Well, the interesting thing is, while at this meeting, this man, whom I didn't know was a firefighter, was there and heard me exclaim these beliefs that I felt so firmly in. And of course, I was sharing from a place of pain. He and I connected on various occasions. And one day he was leaving the meeting and I did some like childlike nonsense, like threw my phone number in his window. Actually, that's exactly what happened. I'm just kind of embarrassed to admit it, but threw my phone number in his window and said, hey, call me sometime. We should get together. The thing is about him was he was like this dark, mysterious kind of dude that really kept to himself, that I wanted to pick his brain so badly. There was something about him that I just could not resist. And inevitably and eventually, he did end up calling me and we did end up hanging out. You know, we went out for coffee and it was one of those things where it's like, the getting to know you questions, like, where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Did you go to college? Oh, and what do you do for a living? Easy question, right? Seems like a super easy question to answer, except for the fact that he wouldn't answer that question. He told me that he worked for the city because he already knew how I felt about firefighters and police officers and my experiences that I had had with them. And he wanted to protect himself and potentially see where our relationship or whatever was happening could go. And his story was, had I really known what he did for a living, I wouldn't give him a chance, which, I mean, he could have been right, but I really don't know that he was right. I think I still would have given him a chance. I kind of had a massive crush on him and whatever. So later down the line, we had been kind of seeing each other for a little while, and I went back to his house for the first time. And when I walked in, he had an office right next to the door when you first walked in. And on the wall in his office were plaques and firefighter memorabilia and all different kinds of like awards and certificates and little figurines and all the shit that just screamed, hey, I'm a firefighter. And I just looked at him and he just looked at me. And I was like, you are a damn firefighter. And he was like, you still interested? And I was like, well, it's too late now. I'm in. Kind of got a little chuckle out of it. But here's the thing about this man that I call dark and mysterious is that he was dark and mysterious for a reason. He had experienced some pretty significant pain in his life. And as you know, seen the things that can't be unseen and experienced the things that can't be unexperienced. I didn't understand what that meant. I could not even fathom the depths of darkness of the things that he had experienced that kind of made him who he was. Our relationship ended up progressing, and I do believe that he gave me all that he was capable of giving me. And he was an incredible human being, really. He had his stuff, like we all do. The pain for him, the things that he felt inside, were too challenging to even begin to put into words so that I could understand. But he did his best. Not only did he do his best, but I truly feel like he attempted to push me away to save me. I don't think that he wanted me to see the other side, see what was behind the curtain, because what was behind the curtain was really frightening and he wanted to protect me. And any of you out there that come home from work and the wife says, "How was your day, honey?" Fine. You don't want them to see. You don't want them to know. You don't want them to experience. You want to protect them. And I do think that that was exactly what he was doing for me. But on top of all of that, he coped in the same ways that I coped back in the day with alcohol, avoiding, and he definitely tried therapy for sure. Nothing felt like it was helping. And even though we met in the world of recovery, nothing was fixing that humongous, painful, festering wound that he was experiencing inside. About 9 months into our relationship, after he had already suffered from trip to the ICU based out of a self-harming experience, after me standing by his bedside thinking, "I can save him. If I just love him enough, I can ensure that he will never be back in this ICU." I really, really believed that. I really believed that. I thought love can get anybody through this. And so I do want to reiterate that it had nothing to do with him loving me. But I really, truly feel like he didn't know how to love himself and didn't feel worthy of this relationship and didn't know what to do or how to not feel the way that he was feeling. So he did get out of the ICU and we went back to business as usual, as if nothing had really happened. Several months had passed after that particular situation had happened, and he was acting strange one night, and I couldn't figure out what was going on with him. I was very puzzled. He was disconnected. He was stumbling. His words were slurring. He wasn't making a lot of sense. It was just so out of left field. I mean, even the days leading up to this particular evening, he was off. There was something off. He would leave the room and he would come back. And every time he would leave the room and he would come back, he'd be a little more off, a little more wobbly, a little more just fucked up. I don't even know how else to say it. That's really what it was. When we finally went to bed and we woke up the next day, I could tell he was just trying to push me away and push me. Like, it was the most bizarre thing. It was like he was trying to make me mad enough that I would leave. And what I think now is that he was trying to protect me so he could do what he needed to do to not feel, or to feel ease. So we had gotten into an argument. I had decided that I was going to leave. I was going to go someplace else and work. And I had forgotten my computer bag. And when I turned around and went back inside, I found out exactly what he had been doing for the last couple of days, which was the most idiotic thing. And at the time, I couldn't understand. But what I do know, and any of you know that have worked and had an administration to answer to, is like, you will get busted. They will drug test you. They will find out. And so there was only a very few substances that he could actually use and not lose his job. This is all things that I've kind of put together. And I'll let you guys, I don't know, visualize whatever the hell you want to visualize. I don't, again, want to put too much of his stuff out there. For whatever reason, in that moment, when I walked in on him and saw what he had been doing for a couple days, it was like I heard this voice. It wasn't even a voice. It was this gut, deep, visceral, knowing feeling inside my soul that I needed to stand up and say something about it, that no matter how much I loved him, I just knew that if I stayed there and tried to save him once again, that I was going to go down too. And for whatever reason, in that moment, I said, "I love you, but I love myself more, and I can't sit here and watch you do this to yourself." And he did the whole, "Okay, then get out." And I did. And so for two straight days, the phone rang and rang. And for two straight days, I sat on my phone. I gave my phone to my friends. I put it on mute. I distracted myself. And then one morning, the phone stopped ringing. And it was silent. And at first I thought, well, maybe he just got tired of calling me. Maybe he just figured that I was really done. What I was protecting myself. What I was doing was letting him figure this out on his own. And he did. So later in the afternoon, after the 2 days of the phone ringing and then stopping, I got a phone call from his neighbor who happened to also be my insurance agent. So he had my phone number. And on the other line is this dry, emotionless voice. And he just said, "Aaron, he's dead." And in that moment, I crumbled to the floor. I've never experienced pain quite like that in my whole entire life. And it's just one of those things that unless you've experienced it, you can't put words to it. So I did what I've always done, and I pulled myself up by my bootstraps, and I got busy, and we got through the funeral, and the whole thing, the whole gamut happened, and the administration came out. And so I definitely am not trying to speak ill about whatever they felt like they needed to do, but definitely have my own opinions about how things were handled. And all I wanted to do was go in his house, get some stuff that reminded me of him, of us, be as close to him as I possibly could, considering. And most of those things that were special or important to us were gone because they had been removed. And I shut the door in his home for the final time to whatever normalcy I thought I could create. And the way that I did that was by doubling down on staying busy, by picking up more hours at work and traveling for work and hanging out with people and going to meetings and keeping myself so busy that I couldn't feel a damn fucking thing and wouldn't let myself cry. Unless I was alone or I was in the safety of people that I trusted in a meeting. But you know what I didn't do when he died? Was drink. I was not going to let him die in vain. I was not going to let him leaving this earth take me out too. I knew that there was something way bigger out there for me. I just didn't know what. So I cried when I didn't need to cry, but I sure as hell stayed busy. Later down the line, I ended up meeting my husband, who, by the way, I should say, is not a man in uniform. Quite frankly, the first guy said in the beginning that I've probably ever dated in some capacity. And even if they weren't a man in uniform, they were, you know, a gym rat or just had that whole vibe. And my husband does not have that vibe. And it was a unique experience to get into a relationship with a man who is unlike any other that I had ever been with. But as the years passed and I, you know, we have a couple kids now and everything else, different roads started opening up for me. Different opportunities started opening up for me. I started to see that I was really good at being a helper. I was really good at seeing through into people's true pain and helping them come out on the other side of it. Like, there was just something about the resiliency of being in the depths myself in many capacities, and many that I never have said on this show. But I can just tell you that I've been there. And I think that that is what makes me so unique in what I do. And what makes me really understand you guys, you gals, the way that I do. But the whole reason I tell you this long, crazy, sad story is because several days ago, now he's been gone for 12 years, I should say, and several days ago, a couple days after his birthday, I was on social media, and out of the damn blue, his Facebook profile pops up and is active again. Now, you know, I have my feelings. My brother said, it's probably a hacker. You know how they do. They get in there and they, whatever the hell they do, they reactivate these accounts and then they use them to scam people. And he's probably right. But the fact of the matter is that it knocked me so far off my axis. I felt like I couldn't breathe. And that night I had this dream that was so real, that is actually a reoccurring dream, but this time it was real as seeing my kids in the morning or my husband at night. It was real. And there he was, me on one side, looking over a sea of people, so many people, like almost like at a party or something. And all of the people were blurry except for me and him. And when I looked at him, I thought, how are you standing here? You're dead. How are you here? And he didn't say anything to me in the dream. But I got this real sense of him saying, like, I am here, I am watching you. And at one point I even like laid my chest or my head on his chest just to hear his heart beating again. And in the dream, of course, it was beating. And when I rudely got woken up by my alarm clock going off, all I wanted to do was go back to sleep and see how that dream ended. Like, I felt like there was something more for me to understand or learn about his passing or about who I have become. And so for the past several days, I've been in a tremendous amount of grief, and this has come so far out of left field because I thought I had moved through this. I thought I had processed all of this. But what I'm seeing is that it's because of you guys. Because of all of you, the way that you've opened my eyes and let me see that everything that he had gone through, everything that he had suffered through, all of the reasons why he could no longer be on this earth were so that I could be here for you. And so when I hear your stories, it helps me understand his pain. When I support you through your breakthroughs, it helps me feel like I'm helping him in some way, because I really truly believe that he does look down on me. If you believe in that, or there's some way that he knows that his death was for the greater good, was for the bigger picture. For the past several years, since working specifically with first responders, I can't see my life being anything but that. You guys are the first thing I think about when I wake up and the last thing I think about when I go to bed. Cinnamon and I together are constantly thinking of the next right thing, the next thing that we can do to help you see, feel, understand, and heal. It is our driving force. because I want to be sure that no first responder ever has to feel the way that he felt again, to the point that he felt like he couldn't be here anymore. So there's something about understanding what's behind the curtain of the person that you tell all of your deepest, darkest secrets to. And so it felt really important for me to tell you what's behind my curtain, why I'm here, and why I give a shit. I know that doesn't have to be like that. I know that it doesn't have to be that painful. And I really believe that there is hope for all of you that are still trying to figure it out. And I trust and believe that when you're ready, you know where to go. So there's a little tidbit about Aaron.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of After the Tones Drop. Today's show has been brought to you by Whole House Counseling. As a note, After the Tones Drop is for informational purposes only and does not constitute for medical or psychological advice. It is not a substitute for professional healthcare advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Please contact a local mental health professional in your area if you are in need of any assistance. You can also visit afterthetonesdrop.com and click on our resources tab for an abundance of helpful information. And we would like to give a very special thank you and shout out to Venz Adams, Yeti, and Sonda for our show's music.